Blog Talk Radio.
With me on this lovely but chilly and cold Friday morning here in St. Louis. You are listening to Conservative Cauldron Radio. I am your host, Becky Noble. Again, thank you one and all for hanging out, and happy Valentine's Day to everyone. An early happy Valentine's Day for all of you sweethearts. Hope that you have some big plans for Valentine's Day, and that will be fun. But here we are. We have, as always, lots of stuff to get into. And, gosh, I am, as usual, I am loaded for bear today, people. So we got a lot to talk about, a lot to get into. So I guess we should just dive right in and get into it. Of course, this week, this past Tuesday, we had the New Hampshire primary. And, you know, I guess you can probably kind of figure out that while I don't want this to be all presidential politics all the time for an hour. You know, it is the big story, and it is what's going on, and there's a lot to talk about in relation to it. But, again, of course, the New Hampshire primary was this past Tuesday, February the 9th, and I don't know that there were a whole lot of surprises here. Donald Trump on the Republican side won the New Hampshire primary. Bernie Sanders was expected to take New Hampshire as well, which he did. And, you know, and I've been saying all along that that New Hampshire is an interesting place, that that people tend to think that because it's a northeastern state, it's New England, and so I think they make the assumption that it's very, very liberal. And yeah, there's a lot of liberals in New Hampshire. But there's also a lot of independents and a lot of people who, you know, that they don't follow conventional wisdom. And I also heard it said that because they are second in the nation, that they don't, they almost try on purpose not to follow and do what Iowans do in the Iowa caucuses. And that kind of rang true. The final numbers at the end of the night here, this is a report from CNN. Donald Trump came away with 34%. Kind of a surprise, but not really a surprise. Ohio Governor John Kasich came in second with 16%. Ted Cruz, Jeb Bush, and Marco Rubio were all tied at 11%. And New Jersey Governor Chris Christie, who has since dropped out of the race, came in at 8%. And this said that this is a report from Tuesday for or Wednesday, I'm sorry, from CNN, that at that point he was going home to mull things over and figure out where he was at. And of course, he has since dropped out of the race, as has former Hewlett-Packard CEO Carly Fiorina. She has also suspended her presidential campaign. And over on the Democrat side, of course, that there really wasn't a big surprise that Bernie Sanders ran away with it. And that, I think the final tally there was Bernie Sanders with 60% of the vote to Hillary Clinton's 39%. And, you know, I think that as we look forward to South Carolina, there's a lot of questions. There's a lot of questions maybe as to John Kasich. He really put in a lot of work in New Hampshire, had a really good ground game, did a lot of work there. And I think that it really was also rather expected that he was going to come in second up there too, because again, because New Hampshire voters really are kind of an independent lot, and so he did very well up there. But it's going to remain to be seen as we head towards South Carolina now, which will take place a week from tomorrow on February the 20th. It, you know, it'll remain to be seen whether or not he does as well in New Hampshire, or that he does as well in South Carolina as he does in New Hampshire. And again, you know, I think the reason that these three states are first in the nation is because they are so different and they are so diverse. And I think that they represent a microcosm of the country, where Iowa is very, very Midwest. There's not just conservatives, there's Democrats, there's liberals. Word on the street really is that Iowa really is, and you would think because it is a Midwestern state, and that you would think that there'd be a lot of Midwestern values there and a lot of conservatives, but that over the years that Iowa really has gotten more and more liberal. And again, then you have New Hampshire where yeah, there are a lot of liberals, but there's a lot of conservatives, and there's a lot of independents there. And now we're going to South Carolina, and there is a very, very large voting base of people who identify as evangelicals. You are going to the minority vote is going to come into play here, where maybe prior to now in Iowa and New Hampshire, it has not. So it's going to be a whole different canvas, I think, as we head to South Carolina. And next week, in the days leading up to the primary, it's going to be interesting. But Hillary Clinton, it wasn't a good week for Hillary Clinton, and we're going to get into that as we go along here today. It wasn't a good night for her. I don't think what I read and what I saw was that she was pretty much resigned to the fact that she wasn't going to take New Hampshire, but she wanted to come out within single digits, easy for me to say, of Bernie Sanders, and that absolutely did not happen. And it's going back, I think, to the fact that Hillary Clinton is not her husband. She, whatever you might think of Bill Clinton, love him or hate him, you know, I can speak for myself and say that there's probably nothing that I agree politically with Bill Clinton on. But what I think you have to give him is his props for being a hell of a politician. He is that. He knows what to say. He knows how to say it. He knows how to connect with people and how to relate to them. And Hillary Clinton does not have that. And I think as time goes on here, we are going to see a lot of that. But there are also there's talk that there is some strife within the Clinton campaign, that there's some problems going on there. But you know, I think the thing is that I don't know, and it's funny because the Republicans and the Democrats kind of when you look at it, they kind of have the same problem, because you have the GOP establishment who hates Donald Trump and they really hate Ted Cruz, and they want neither one of them. They're, you know, Jeb was their guy, but Jeb's not getting it done. And so then they started looking towards Marco Rubio, and Marco Rubio did not have a good night last Saturday during that debate. It was kind of like before Chris Christie waved his hand and said goodbye. He did a pretty good job at attempting to take Marco Rubio out, and it really did hurt him, because he came in fifth on Tuesday night in New Hampshire. But it's to his credit that he realized what happened. Myself, personally, when I watched the debate, yeah, that minute and a half, 2 minutes, yeah, that was bad for him. It was really bad, and it made him look flustered. It made him look disheveled. It made him look completely discombobulated. But once once he got past that minute and a half, 2 minutes, I actually thought he had a good night. And I think probably the reason that it has been coming off bad, I'm not saying it was good, it was bad, but the reason that it's been coming off really, really bad is that because people and the media have been harping on it for all this week. And so I don't think that it is, he can't recover from it. I think he can. But, I think he may find a friendlier crowd in South Carolina than he did in New Hampshire. When you look at the front runners, when you look at Donald Trump, when you look at Ted Cruz, I think that, maybe I'm kind of sounding like conventional wisdom here, but I'm going to go out on a limb here and I'm going to make a prediction, but I don't think it's a prediction that other people haven't made. I think that more than likely that Ted Cruz will take South Carolina, again, because of that large evangelical voter base. And I don't know that that the brashness of Donald Trump is going to play well with those voters. We'll see. We'll see what happens. That can lead me into some poll numbers. I do have the latest Real Clear Politics poll numbers here. They average together, oh my God, they average together 50 bazillion polls. Everybody and their brother is doing a poll right now today during this election cycle. But these are national numbers right now, according to the Real Clear Politics poll averages. excuse me. Donald Trump is at 29.5%. Ted Cruz is at 21%. Marco Rubio, 17.8%. Ben Carson, 7.8%. And Jeb Bush, 4.3%. In South Carolina, is ahead. A lot of people are saying, again, like I just said, that they think that South Carolina is going to be very good to Ted Cruz with the large evangelical voter base. But right now in South Carolina, the Real Clear Politics average, the average of poll numbers is Donald Trump at 37.3, Ted Cruz 20.3, Marco Rubio 14, Jeb Bush 9.3, and Ben Carson at 7.3. Now, we've kind of jumped ahead here a little bit to Michigan, and I'm not real sure why we are looking at poll numbers for Michigan, because Michigan doesn't happen until, I believe, March the 5th, and you've got Super Tuesday in between there, so a lot of things can happen before Michigan. But the Michigan numbers right now are Donald Trump at 38%, Marco Rubio at 20.5, Ted Cruz 18.5, Ben Carson at 7, and John Kasich at 6. I think that's kind of a given, being it's a neighboring state. John Kasich might do, he will do well in Michigan. And there's the question of people like Ben Carson, even Jim Gilmore. Did anybody even remember that he was running? Who's Jim Gilmore? I don't know. Well, yeah, Jim Gilmore, former Virginia governor. He's still in the race. And I don't know that anybody really is sure why. And Ben Carson. Ben Carson says he's in it to win it, that he's going to hang around until it is impossible for him to hang around any longer. And, again, we're still very, very early in the process, and so a lot can happen. A lot can happen between now and, pick a date. There may be some very some good states coming up for Ben Carson, and he may be able to pick up his numbers and hang in there. But before we go on here, I'm going to we got a little bit of Donald Trump's victory speech from the New Hampshire primary on Tuesday night.
We are going to make America great again, but we're going to do it the old-fashioned way. We're going to beat China, Japan. We're going to beat Mexico at trade. We're going to beat all of these countries that are taking so much of our money away from us on a daily basis. It's not going to happen anymore. We have the greatest business people right now in the world. They call me all the time. They want to be involved. We have political hacks negotiating our deals for billions and billions and billions of dollars. Not going to happen anymore. We're going to use the finest business people in the world. We are going to do something so good and so fast and so strong, and the world is going to respect us again, believe me. So we're going to take care of the economy. We're going to take care of jobs. We're going to take care of all of the things that I said, our border, everything, healthcare. It's going to be so great. Remember this about Obamacare. People are forgetting, but now they're miserable because it's going up 45%, 35%, 55%. It's totally out of control. Probably sinks of its own volition in 2017, unless the Republicans give it another. I mean, what's going on? What's going on? The budget, the last budget that was approved, is an absolute disaster for everybody in this country. We owe $19 trillion as of today. We just crossed the $19 trillion mark. We're going to very shortly be at $21 trillion because of the budget. We are going to make our country so strong. We are going to start winning again. We don't win anymore as a country. We don't win on trade. We don't win with the military. We can't beat ISIS. We don't win with anything. We are going to start winning again, and we're going to win so much. You are going to be so happy. We are going to make America so great again, maybe greater than ever before.
That was Donald Trump on his victory on Tuesday night in New Hampshire primary. And a couple little factoids here. Donald Trump won every single demo in that state. He won men, he won women, he won minorities, he won you name it. He won. I believe he won with millennials. It's he won every single demographic in that state. Granted, as far as minorities go, there's probably not a large minority voter base in New Hampshire. But what's there, he won. And on the flip side of that coin, Hillary Clinton lost every single one of those demographics. Every single one. She won two. She won in the 65 and over demographic, and she also won with people whose income was over $250,000. So that may tell you a little bit about especially where younger voters are with Hillary Clinton. She is, you know, Bernie Sanders may be a old 74-year-old guy, but to all of these younger people, he's new. He's fresh. He's new. Hillary Clinton has been around for 25 years. And they are especially, and it's, you know, if you stand back and look at this, you know, this whole thing, especially on the Democrat side, nothing is going the way it was supposed to for Hillary Clinton, because not only does she have the whole email scandal, and now we learn that the FBI is also investigating the Clinton Foundation. We don't know much about that yet. That will, I'm sure, be forthcoming. So there's yet another thing. Millennials don't remember all of the Clinton scandals of the 90s. They don't remember all of the bimbo eruptions. They don't remember the Rose Law Firm. They don't remember Vince Foster. They don't remember pick a scandal. There's too many to choose from. They were either not even born yet, or they were too young to remember all of those things. And I think that it's going to be up to Republicans to teach them a little bit of history and remind them of those things. But you know, Hillary Clinton, the plan was that Hillary Clinton was supposed to just walk right into this nomination, that she was just going to slide on through and everything was going to be kittens and sunshine and she wasn't going to have a care in the world. Well, she's got a lot of cares in the world because she narrowly squeaked out that victory in Iowa, and a lot of people are saying this needs to be investigated further because they really don't believe that she won. And she did not have a good night in New Hampshire. I have a report here from Newsmax. It's called Seven Things Hillary Did to Piss Off Democrats. And she has. And a couple of those things before I go to a break, again, the thing with the scandals, Monica Lewinsky. Millennials don't know a whole lot about Monica Lewinsky. They've probably heard her name, but they probably don't know the whole story. Benghazi, you know, the Arkansas State Troopers hunting up chicks for Bill Clinton. They say that she's cozying up to Wall Street. And those are the people that Bernie Sanders is vilifying right now, those evil bankers and those evil Wall Street guys. And, again, she is just not – she's not likable. She's not somebody you want to go out – for women, she's not somebody they want to go out for lunch with. She just doesn't have – that likable hang out with me kind of personality that her husband does. You know, again, Bill Clinton may be a whole lot of things, but there's a lot of people that might say, oh yeah, I disagree with him about everything, but he'd be a hell of a fun guy to go have a beer with. She doesn't have that. She just doesn't have that. And I think it's going to hurt her a little bit more as this process, you know, as we go forth in this process. There's a couple other things here, but I am going to take a quick break. We will talk about the rest of the things that Hillary's done to piss off the Democrats. And, oh, there may be a little bit of, questionable activity as far as fundraising going on in the Democrat Party. Shocking, I know. We will talk about that, plus a whole lot of other stuff. You are listening to Conservative Cauldron Radio. I am Becky Noble, TGIF. Stay right where you are. You're listening to Conservative Cauldron Radio. I am your host, Becky Noble, TGIF, and happy Valentine's Day to everyone. Hope that you have great and wonderful, fabulous plans with your Valentine this weekend. I know I do. But, of course, we're talking about Tuesday's New Hampshire primary, and Donald Trump came away with that win on the Republican side, and Bernie Sanders took New Hampshire. That neither one of those things really was a big surprise. You know, we're talking about Hillary, and you know, she's got problems, and the Democrats are not, they're not gonna, you're not gonna see them on the internet or on TV or on radio or in print or anywhere else talking about her problems, but she's got them. And I have a report here from Newsmax. It's funny. It's called Seven Things Hillary Did to Piss Off Democrats. And, you know, this may not be happening just in Iowa and New Hampshire. It may be, she may be ticking off Democrats all over the place. And a couple of the things that I touched on before the break was that all of her scandals, Monica Lewinsky, Benghazi, you know, again, a lot of those millennial voters don't remember all of the Clinton scandals of the 90s. She has received a lot of money from Wall Street fat cats, and those are the same guys that Bernie Sanders is saying is the root of a lot of our problems. And that's resonating with young millennials, college students who are, you know, strapped with a lot of student loan. She is not the retail politician that her husband is, in no way. And no matter how hard she tries, she comes off as cold and just not relatable. And what I said before the break was that you may disagree with Bill Clinton on every single thing there is to disagree with him on, but a lot of people will say to you, oh yeah, he looks like a hell of a guy to go out and have a beer with. She doesn't have that. She doesn't have that. She has chosen an uninspiring message. And what it says here is that Bernie Sanders has tapped into the economic anxiety of voters, and he's calling for a political revolution, and which is aimed at curbing the outside influence of the billionaire class and quote leveling the playing field. That's a whole other topic, but for ordinary Americans. And she has struggled to inspire Democrats, and you know, she will give a lengthy resume of experience, but I mean, what experience does she have? You know, I mean, if you want to talk about Secretary of State, the first thing that's going to come to mind is Benghazi. And you know, for a lot of people, Hillary Clinton's biggest accomplishment is that she found a guy in college that she thought was going to go places, and she kind of hooked herself onto him and made sure she married him and rode his coattails. And that's not an accomplishment. And I think to a lot of younger women, it's definitely not an accomplishment. Maybe for those, which really is kind of ironic, since Hillary Clinton came of age in the whole women's rights feminism movement. And you know, that had a lot of anti-man elements to it. So it's really kind of ironic, maybe that really is her biggest accomplishment. She has not assembled the coalition that Barack Obama did in 2008. And what we saw, you know, and I've heard this a lot from people, is that what they saw with Barack Obama in 2008 is now what they're seeing with Donald Trump. Because in 2008, Barack Obama, of course, got minority voters. He got single women. He got young people. And Donald Trump is doing a lot of that, too. The media is not going to talk about it. Not even Fox News really talks about it. But he is getting a big chunk of minority vote. And that's going to be big. And at some point, they're going to have to talk about it. And so Barack Obama brought all of those people together, and Hillary Clinton just is not doing it. Again, she's not polling well with young women. She's not polling well with millennials, with college-age people. And, you know, it's she's going to have to pick up her game, or, you know, we may be it's not supposed to happen. It was never supposed to happen, but it may be Bernie's time. I don't believe that the Democratic Party is going to allow Bernie Sanders to be their nominee. This is only February, kids, and let's just say that a lot can happen between now and November. People are still, I hear crazy Uncle Joe Biden's name every now and then. We know that Democrats will, well, let's just say they find the rules sometimes a bit flexible. And if these two candidates are not not sufficient for them, shall we say, we may be looking at some alternatives. I'll leave it at that. She has really started to attack Bernie Sanders, and they're not taking it well, because at one of his recent rallies, you had a whole auditorium full of millennials yelling Hillary Clinton is a liar. And again, she's not going to be able to put this email scandal behind her. It's going to continue whether or not, and I have something in my stack of stuff today about more pressure being put on Attorney General Loretta Lynch to, excuse me, should the FBI come back with a recommendation for some sort of indictment. Pressure's on Loretta Lynch that whatever her politics, people are not convinced at this point that she's going to put them aside in order to do what legally needs to be done. But we'll get to that in a minute. But, of course, you know, some things never change with the Democrats. And if it wasn't so skanky, if it wasn't so sleazy, if it wasn't so nasty, you know, I'm guilty of the same thing. We giggle about it and roll our eyes and say, yeah, some things will never change. But this is interesting. I just got this morning. It is from the Washington Post, and it says the DNC rolls back Obama ban on contributions from federal lobbyists. And what is going on here is that, again, from the Washington Post, the Democrat National Committee has rolled back restrictions introduced by presidential candidate Barack Obama in 2008 that banned donations from federal lobbyists and political action committees. And, you know, when you look at that, it probably was a pretty brilliant move on his part, because at that time, you know, again, Hillary was the front runner in 2008 before a guy named Barack Obama came along. And she was the one with the connections, and she was the one that knew the money people, and she was the one with the PACs. And this was probably a pretty what's the word I'm looking for? I'm having a brain fart here. It was probably a pretty shrewd move on the part of Obama to do this so that the fundraising playing field was kind of leveled out a bit. But now, well, not so much. The decision, of course, by the Democrat National Committee may provide an advantage to Hillary Clinton's candidacy. You think? There are a lot of people who believe that at this point in time, right now today, that the Democrat Party, that the DNC is, they're tolerating Bernie Sanders. They're letting him do his thing. They're letting him have his rallies. They're letting him go through the motions, but there are a lot of people, again, who don't think that, they kind of say to themselves, Bernie, if you think that you're going to be the nominee, regardless of what happens to Hillary Clinton, you know, be she get indicted or what have you, that there is going to be something that happens to where Bernie Sanders is not their nominee. And there's a quote here from longtime campaign finance reform advocate Fred Wertheimer, and he says, quote, "It is a major step in the wrong direction, and it is completely out of touch with the clear public rejection of the role of political money in Washington expressed during the 2016 campaign." And I think he is right, because it's one of the things, it's a big chunk of people's anger really on both sides that they just don't think that Washington is cutting it. And especially on the Republican side, for conservatives in 2010, in 2014, The Republican establishment said elect Republicans and we'll take the House and we'll get A, B, and C done. Elect Republicans, give us the Senate and we'll get A, B, and C done. And all of these people got elected and they went to Washington and something happens when you get there. I don't know what it is. But none of that, not only has none of that been done, but they really have come out and said, we're not going to fight anything on Barack Obama's agenda. We're just going to kind of go along with it and play along with it. And that's not what people have voted for. And now this has happened in two election cycles, in 2010 and 2014. And, yeah, people are pissed. People are pissed off. They want some answers. They want some accountability. And they want people who are going to go do what they said they were going to do, regardless of the consequences, regardless of their reelection chances. But I digress. Going back to the Washington Post here, since it was introduced, lobbyists and corporate advocates in Washington have complained about the ban and other limitations imposed by Obama. The only portion of the old rules now remaining in place is that lobbyists and PAC representatives will still not be able to attend events that feature Obama, Vice President Biden, or their spouses. This is according to Mark Paustenbach, Deputy Communications Director for the DNC. And he says, quote, the DNC's recent change in guidelines will ensure that we continue to have the resources and infrastructure in place to best support whoever emerges as our eventual nominee. Well, yeah, that's the operative phrase there, whoever emerges as our eventual nominee. Over the summer, the DNC announced it was lifting a ban on lobbyist contributions to convention-based expenses. At the time, DNC officials said that the move was necessary because Congress had eliminated about $20 million in federal funding for the quadrennial party gatherings. That's for both Democrats and Republicans. The fact that there would be that much federal funding for political conventions is kind of a whole other topic for me. That's a little disturbing for me, but... As we go along here, the DNC's recent sweeping reversal of the previous ban on donations from lobbyists and political action committees was confirmed by three Democrat lobbyists who said they have already received solicitations from the committee. However, these lobbyists requested anonymity to speak freely about the committee's decision, which has otherwise been kept quiet. And that's another question I think you have to ask. Why did they feel the need to slip this under the rug? If it's not a problem, why just come out and announce it? It goes on. Washington Post goes on to say here that the decision is the latest move likely to inflame tensions between the DNC and supporters of Senator Bernie Sanders. The Vermont Independent, who has railed against lobbyist influence, particularly those representing Wall Street. Hillary Clinton, the Democrat frontrunner, has set up a joint fundraising committee with the DNC, and the new rules are likely to provide her with an advantage, you think? In recent months, Sanders supporters have accused the DNC of trying to prevent more primary debates, trying to tilt the race in Clinton's direction. Just this week, his backers were enraged that the DNC allowed the senior members of the Congressional Black Caucus to use the committee's Capitol Hill headquarters to announce that their PAC had endorsed Hillary Clinton over Sanders. Sanders backers have also expressed concerns that the DNC is not playing a more vigorous role in checking out disputes over voting in the recent Iowa caucuses, which Clinton narrowly won. So, of course, this lifting of this ban is going to help Hillary Clinton. And I think that Bernie Sanders people, you know, they're kind of seeing the writing on the wall and they're seeing what's going on here. I don't know at this point that you could deny that maybe there is some tilt going on here in the Democrat media for Hillary Clinton. Because, again, none of this was ever supposed to happen. Hillary Clinton was supposed to just slide on into that nomination just as easy as you please, and there was going to be nobody to stop her. Well, you know, along came Bernie Sanders, and his message is resonating with a lot of young people. What those young people don't realize is that the astronomical growth of government that he proposed, you know, it's kids who have never had it explained to them that there is no free lunch. I also have a thing here from Newsmax that it's kind of it in case for anybody that really doesn't know that Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders actually did debate that last night.
Oh, really?
Well, yeah, they did. And there was kind of some clashes here that happened during that debate. Of course, Bernie Sanders is trying to label Hillary Clinton as establishment because she has taken a lot of money from Wall Street. And going back to what I just said about millennials not realizing the cost that all of this free stuff that Bernie Sanders is promising them is that during this debate last night, Bernie Sanders was asked how much larger the government would get under his socialist agenda. He acknowledged there would be a limit, but did not specify where the limit was. And that's when Hillary Clinton jumped in and said, I think that the best analysis I've seen based on Senator Sanders' plans is that it would probably increase the size of the federal government by about 40%. She then attacked his health care plan, saying every progressive economist who has analyzed that says that the numbers don't add up and it's a promise that cannot be kept. Well, at this point, Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders are both trying to out-progressive each other. And for Hillary Clinton, be it Hillary Clinton or anybody else, to complain about the government is going to get larger, I mean, for any liberal to complain that the government is going to get larger, that's a big deal. Well, it is going to get larger, and what would actually happen is that it would double the national debt. And for anybody who knows what that number is right now, I believe it is hovering between $18 and $20 trillion. So do the math, you know. Hillary Clinton has tied herself to Barack Obama. She's tried to distance herself a little bit. But, it's going to work for her during the primaries when she's kind of preaching to the choir. But she's going to have to distance herself from him should she become the nominee in the general election. And that is going to be hard to do. And it's going to be hard to do because of one word, Benghazi. It goes on here that Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton compete to praise Obama's executive actions, which have been hugely unpopular. They're both vying for younger voters right now, and Bernie Sanders is killing it as far as younger voters go. And he's, Bernie Sanders is going on here to talk about her super PACs and her vote for the Iraq War, her ties to Henry Kissinger, of all people. I mean, it goes, there's 11 different things here. The one thing I found kind of amusing was that Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton compete to show off Kennedy ties. I think Ted Kennedy had a very clear idea about what needed to be done, and I was proud to stand with him and support it, Clinton declared, alluding to his 2007 immigration bill. Well, let me just respond, said Bernie Sanders. I worked with Ted Kennedy. He was the chairman of my committee, and I love Ted Kennedy. But on this issue, when you have one of the largest Latino organizations in America saying vote no, and you have the AFL-CIO saying vote no, and you have leading progressive Democrats, in fact, voting no, I don't apologize for that vote. So I think the only thing missing there from Bernie Sanders was I knew Ted Kennedy. I worked with Ted Kennedy, and you, ma'am, are no Ted Kennedy, to paraphrase Lloyd Benson during the Lloyd Benson Dan Quayle vice presidential debates back during the George H.W. Bush era. But Hillary's got problems. Don't let anybody tell you any different. And they're probably not going to get a whole lot better. I have a report here from The Hill. Also, and a little side note here before I move on to that. Talking about this rollback by the DNC on the contributions from lobbyists and political action committees. As we go to South Carolina, as everybody moves on to the South Carolina primary, well, the chairman of the South Carolina Democrat Party, I did not get his name, but he is the first African-American to be named the South Carolina Democrat Party chair, so that's a big deal. But he works for a firm known as the Podesta Group. They are a lobbying firm founded by Tony and John. The name John Podesta sounds familiar to you? Well, it should, because if memory serves me correctly, John Podesta was former President Bill Clinton's chief of staff. And in addition to founding the Podesta Group, which is a lobbying firm, with his brother Tony, John Podesta has one more other job, a little side job that he's currently working on, and that would be being chairman of the Hillary Clinton campaign. Do the math there, people. I'm going to take a break. I will be right back.
Never knew how much I love you. Never knew how much I care. When you put your arms around me, I get a fever that's so hard to bear. You give me fever when you kiss me, fever when you hold me tight. Fever in the morning, fever all through the night.
Sun lights up the daytime, moon lights up the night. I light up when you call the name, and you know I'm gonna treat you right. You give me fever when you kiss me, fever when you hold me tight. Fever in the morning, I'll fever all through the night.
Everybody's got the fever. Oh, that's just something that you should know. Fever isn't such a new thing. Fever started long ago.
Yeah, 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 yeah. Oh, tell about it.
Romeo loved Juliet.
Uh-huh.
Juliet, she felt the same. When he put his arms around her, he said, Julie, baby, you're my flame. I'll give it fever.
Fever, 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 yeah.
When we kiss it, fever with eyes flaming you.
Oh, fever,
I'm
on
fire. Fever, yeah, I burn for soon.
You're listening to Conservative Cauldron Radio. I am your host, Becky Noble. Thank you for chilling with me on this Friday, TGIF, the Friday before Valentine's Day. I hope everyone is going to get to spend Valentine's Day with their sweetheart. We are, of course, talking presidential politics, and there's a lot of it to talk about because we are, man, we're in the thick of it now, kids. We're there. And for geeks like me, well, Christmas and our birthdays all rolled into one. What can I tell you? We probably all need to get out more, I know. But I have a report here from The Hill, and it talking about, and this has been, it's been something that has been mentioned, I've heard, you know, here and there on TV, on the internet, even, in, you know, in print, various places, that should the FBI find sufficient evidence that they can recommend an indictment against Hillary Clinton. There has been a lot of people, mostly conservatives, have questioned whether or not Attorney General Loretta Lynch is impartial enough to go ahead with this if the FBI does recommend it. And again, this is a report from The Hill, and this is from Monday of this week, and it says that there is more and more pressure on Attorney General Lynch to step aside in the whole Hillary Clinton email probe. And it says that if the FBI finds sufficient evidence to launch a criminal investigation into Hillary Clinton or one of her top aides for mishandling classified information, Lynch's Justice Department will have to decide whether or not to press ahead. And already top Republicans, of course, are calling for special prosecutors in this case to evaluate the situation. Number two Senate Republican John Cornyn of Texas took to the floor of the Senate last week to call for a special counsel to be appointed, quote, because of the conflict of interest by asking Attorney General Lynch to investigate and perhaps even prosecute somebody in the Obama administration. Senate Judiciary Committee Chuck Grassley of Iowa agrees that Lynch ought to consider a special counsel, a representative said, to reassure the country that decisions are made, quote, without regard to any political considerations. The Justice Department up to now, however, has declined this request of a special prosecutor. Justice Department spokeswoman, Melanie Newman, said in a statement, quote, this matter is being reviewed by career attorneys and investigators and does not meet the criteria for the appointment of a special prosecutor. Right now, critics of Clinton have called for indictments to be handed down following revelations that more than 1,500 classified emails, including 22 classified at the highest level, were found on her personal server. None of the messages were marked as classified, and accounts differ as to whether they should have been classified at the time they were sent. During the previous, not the one just last night, but the debate prior to last night's, Hillary Clinton was asked about this, and she said that she was, quote, 100% confident that the FBI's review will not evolve into a criminal matter. Well, there's really no way that she can be 100% confident because she is not behind the scenes with the FBI knowing what they know. And she went on to say, quote, I think the American people will know it's an absurdity and I have absolutely no concerns about it whatsoever. Well, you know, she better have concerns about it. But Loretta Lynch's critics are unconvinced that she can be fair and impartial to this. There are a lot of people that that don't think she can. One of the things here, since the FBI has refused to share details about its investigation, so far the Bureau does not appear to be conducting a criminal probe, and officials have said it has not directly targeted Clinton. They have since reversed this. This came out just this week that they admitted that, in fact, that she is the target of this FBI probe. And again, now just within the last day or so, it has come out that she, that not only is she the target of this investigation, but they are also looking into the Clinton Foundation. And I have maintained for quite a while that, you know, I think it's one big giant spider web of connections. And I think it has been professionally made that way, that somebody who knew what they were doing and knew how to make it one big giant paper blob, they knew what they were doing. But we will see if the FBI does come back with a recommendation for indictment. And if there's people, I mean, the likes of Rudy Giuliani, who will speak up for Loretta Lynch and say she's very fair and very impartial and will not let politics enter into her decision on whether or not to go along with the FBI's recommendation. And again, there is a lot of talk that if a recommendation for indictment does come down and nothing happens with it, that you are going to see some pretty ticked off people within the FBI, and there is going to be some some mass exodus and some stuff go on. But again, very quickly before I have to get out of here, still with the with Obama's Justice Department, they are suing the city of Ferguson because the city council rejected. Well, let me read here. This is from Breitbart. Attorney General Loretta Lynch announced Wednesday afternoon that the Federal Department of Justice will sue the cash-strapped city of Ferguson, Missouri, because the city council rejected an expensive deal negotiated by federal officials. With support from local residents, the racially mixed city council rejected the deal unanimously because of its impact on the city's budget. And basically what this would do is all of these recommendations that they have proposed would basically bankrupt the city, including hiring more officers, including raise for the police, training and hire of independent monitor. The cost would require a tax increase on citizens, but after parts of the city were set on fire by Black Lives Matter protesters, Ferguson now has a budget deficit of about $2.5 million. So my question here is that, you know, when are they going to leave these people alone, basically? Why are you insisting that a city that is not wealthy by any stretch of the imagination, there are roughly 60,000 people maybe that live in Ferguson. I believe it is about 60% African-American, but aside from that, this is not a wealthy city. This is a working-class city, and it's not full of wealthy people, no matter what color they are. And my question is, I would like to know, is the DOJ attempting to make an example of these people? Are they attempting to make an example of Ferguson by basically attempting to bankrupt them? Let's call it what it is. We have not heard the last of this one, I'm sure. And Mayor James Knowles, I'm sure, will have plenty of reaction on this. I'm glad to see it. I'm glad they told the Justice Department, no, we would prefer not to go bankrupt. Thank you, but thanks for asking. Very quickly, before I get out of here. A tattoo parlor in Bernie Sanders' home state of Vermont is giving away free tattoos of Sanders' distinctive hair and glasses, and people feeling the burn are lining up for them. Artistic Incorporated, a tattoo shop with locations in Montpelier and Winooski, Vermont, started offering the tattoos January 28th. So far, they've tattooed more than 50 people. Tattoo artist and artistic owner Tyree DuVernay told Mashable, here's what they look like. DuVernay's strategy isn't new. An Oklahoma tattoo parlor gave away free tattoos of Barack Obama in 2008, and many more people got Obama tattoos. And many more people got Obama tattoos than they paid for. In 2012, Politico followed up with five people with Obama tattoos to see how they felt about their body art 4 years later. Most of them didn't regret it, except for the John McCain supporter who got the Obama tattoo because he lost a bet on the election. But one cautioned against the awkwardness of a visible political tattoo can bring. Politics are the last thing I want to talk about to anybody. That's not something I want to deal with every day. I have to walk out of the house onto the streets in shorts. It just got to be more of a hindrance and annoying than it was cool, I guess you could say. So what they look like, basically, very quickly, is Bernie's hair and glasses. And it says, feel the burn. So if you are a Bernie supporter, head on up to Vermont and get your Bernie Sanders feel the burn tattoo. With that, I am out of here. Thank you, everyone, for joining me today. Please go to theblacksphere.net. Kevin Jackson, myself, and a bunch of other talented people there, with lots of things for you to read and peruse. You can go to renegadepoliticsblog.wordpress.com. It's brand new. Check it out. Facebook.com/BeckyNoble, theconservativecauldron.blogspot.com, and on Twitter @PatriotWitch. Happy Valentine's Day, everyone, and I will see you next time.